Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. Very excited. We've got Jay Bayani on the line. Nice to see you.
Hi, Dan. Nice to see you too.
Well, really great to have you here. Jay is a bit of a kind of mover and shaker in the world of law and employment and HR and recruitment, and has been for over a decade as an entrepreneur in her own right, but has over 25 years experience, I believe, as a solicitor, specializing in all areas of HR and employment matters, but particularly the really complicated and sensitive stuff, which is, I think, the sort of what happens in that kind of world, and often is a thing that entrepreneurs can stumble into. And not just any old HR specialist. She was named last year, as in 2021, as the UK top 10 HR advisor from the Enterprise Nation. So congratulations on that. That's a real achievement. So one of the top 10. Woo! But she runs her own business. She's managing director of a firm called Bayani HR and Employment Law, one of only a handful of niche specialist firms in the UK. And she has offices all over the UK, from the north down to London and the Midlands. And she's also the founder and director of Bayani Recruitment, which is a specialist recruitment consultancy. And she's multiple award winning, as you would expect from such an illustrious career. I'm not going to list them all because I'll be embarrassing for you, but there's loads of them. And she's also been entrepreneur in residence at Sheffield Hallam University. And I was impressed by this, but the firm recently won the British Chamber of Commerce's UK Business Hero 2020 title. Can you just tell us, why did you win that award?
So that was all about businesses supporting other businesses during the pandemic. And in the early stages, you know, nobody knew what the word furlough meant, including us as employment lawyers. And so I think we very quickly interpreted some very fast-moving and complex rules that were being thrown at us by the government for businesses, particularly smaller businesses. And that sort of got us quite a lot of national recognition.
Yeah, well done on that. I think it's very, very good. A business hero in the pandemic. Woo! Before I forget, because I often do, this podcast is brought to you by my business, the tech department, which is the business that I blew up back in 2017. Hence the title. It was nosediving, but we managed to turn it around, and now it's doing really well, actually. And so I don't want to do that again, so that's why I'm doing the podcast. So if you're enjoying the podcast and these chats we're having, please share or give it a 5-star review or subscribe and all that good stuff, because that will help other people see what we're up to and get hold of this fantastic insights that Jay is going to impart to us today about how to not blow your business up. So help with that. But I'm going to go back in time, because Jay had a very successful career as a partner in a very respectable law firm for nearly 20 years before she set out on her own as with her own firm. I'm just curious, sort of what made you jump ship from, I guess, a relatively traditional setup to something where you're forging your own career?
Well, actually, it wasn't quite like that, Dan. So there was a little stop along the way. So I was at Wither firm for 18 years, so from newly qualified up to senior partner, everything going pretty swimmingly in lots of ways for somebody of my age. But I really wanted to create a niche employment law practice, because in those days there weren't any that I knew of incorporating the HR. So then I was sort of enticed to join another very small firm out of Sheffield that wanted me and my reputation and all my clients to help them grow their presence in Sheffield. So that's what I did, and learned some very hard lessons before I eventually then set up my own independent firm in, 7 years ago.
Okay, so you have this sojourn with this from the partnership. And so you're in this situation where you have a more, quote, traditional career path for a lawyer.
Yeah.
And then so what happened with this firm when you left your little sojourn?
So there were clearly issues there at quite an early stage when I joined. You know, I realised that things hadn't been revealed to me about the partnership, and particularly a partner. And when I wanted to very amicably talk about my exit, because I just thought it wasn't the right fit for me, I found myself in a 4-year trademark dispute, which cost me a lot of money and a lot of stress because this individual had trademarked my name. When I set up on my own, tried to stop me using my name to trade in, and lots of very, very bad practice, particularly in a law firm. So yes, it got really messy. And I had, a few years of real turmoil with it.
Okay, so this was about 10 years ago when this sort of was happening with...
Yeah, started then, yeah.
All right, so you're in this firm, maybe a more traditional setup, and you decide to venture out and you have a new deal with a new set of partners. And this is about 10 years ago, and then it starts to go wrong. And you're in this situation where you literally can't use your own name. Just before that became apparent, what was going through your mind at that point when you've left your, call it the safe career path, and you've made a strategic choice to move into a different partnership, but it's starting to unravel. What was going through your mind at that time?
Well, I think we all question our decision-making at times. I'm usually very clear on what I want to do and, stand by decisions I've made. But I went from one extreme to another. So the firm that I was with from being newly qualified had a reputation for being extremely high on the integrity scale. Its origins were from Quakers and pacifists in the war. Absolutely wonderful firm with, and I was taught by the partners there how to do business with integrity and honesty and, still be able to make money. And went from that to the only other law firm that I'd really worked in for 3 years, which was the other extreme, how to stab people in the back, how to be as horrible as you can for your own gain, how to not look after the clients in the right way, and lots of things that I didn't want to be a party to. I thought, well, what have I done here?
So was there a particular moment where that became apparent?
Well, it's sort of, the first couple of years were okay. It was I think it was towards the third year when I realised that there were things afoot that made me, and I'm a very trusting person, but I thought, well, this is really strange, And I don't want to really go into the details of it, but there were things that would have compromised my really good reputation and my ability to practice law had I been carried along with some of the antics that I just didn't agree with. So I tried to find a sensible way out of it, but it blew up.
So these antics are unfolding. You're 2 years in. So you've made a commitment and you kind of, it's not the first month or 6 months, you're kind of there for a couple of years and your name is associated with this thing, it's attached to it. And you're not happy with it. It's against your both principles as values, but also principles as a professional.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the yin and yang. It's getting on you on every angle. And you make it a choice to move on and it blows up. So what was the blow up?
So again, being trusting, because I'd come from a very comfortable place, I confided in this particular partner who was a managing partner at that stage by then, and said that, look, it would be in everybody's interest for us to have a parting. I'll run my own, the employment bit independently with my team who I'd taken there with me. I will still help them grow their other part of the business. And really, clients don't even need to know. It would just be better that I wasn't tied into their, the legal entity that was that firm. She completely led me to believe she agreed with that, thought it was a great idea, thought that would be a good result for us all, told me to go off and find this information and that information, which I did. 6 weeks later, called me to a meeting. Became apparent that she hadn't told the other partners our discussions. So obviously they're thinking, well, what on earth's going on here? And then to cut a very long story short, they demanded my resignation, but I hadn't done anything to prepare apart from get this information. So then it all became really, really difficult. And things happened that made it impossible for me to work. As an employment lawyer, all the horror stories you hear from your clients about how stressful it is to be suspended, to be dismissed, to be disciplined. And I must say that, you know, sometimes you take it with a little bit of a pinch of salt. I didn't have as much empathy with some of my clients as I perhaps, well, as I have now, because you think, well, that can't be right. People can't make up documents. People can't get you to sign things that, you know, without your knowledge. But it happens. And yeah, I learned some hard lessons, but it's made me a much better lawyer with a lot more empathy.
That's interesting. Isn't it? The price of the empathy is that going through that painful experience. So how did it feel then at that moment?
Well, awful, you know, and as I say, I've been practicing for years and years, and I had clients who'd say, I can't open the post. I can't go past their building. I can't, you know, I'm not sleeping. I'm not eating. And I was such a tough, you know, I had quite a difficult upbringing, and I was, nothing was going to touch me. But honestly, it really did. And it makes you realise actually what is your undoing as a person. Because for me, I've had other things that have been really, really big to deal with in life, but they didn't start unravelling me. So it made me realise that work is such a big part. It probably is my raison d'etre, my reputation and what I've built up and my work ethic. And so when they start attacking that, it made me quite ill. Yeah. And I had my children were quite young, you know, for them to watch this very strong mother suddenly crying all day and, you know, particularly during the period I wasn't working for a few months. And I picked myself up like I always do and hopefully always will. But, you know, it was really, really tough.
Wow. So you've got this, this real moment in time there where you've been this, like you said, a go-getting, tough lawyer out there making moves and doing deals and being, you know, the top of your game. And suddenly you've this unraveling. And yeah, it's interesting. So it's almost as if they found your Achilles heel somehow.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so what did you learn from that experience?
I think what I learned was to do my checks and balances in future, not to completely trust what somebody's saying to you, which I did there. And I think, you know, one of the things that people said to me at the time it happened was that I was naive and that I was too nice. That I don't really accept. I don't think I was naive. You know, I fought battles all the time for my clients. I was a sharp lawyer and I built a reputation for being so. But when it's your own situation and you're trusting and somebody who has a particular personality where, you know, I'm not the only person that's come off badly at this person's hands. When that happens and somebody's sort of, you know, working their way into your brain, it's surprising how trusting you become. But yeah, I mean, what I've learned is that what I learned at that time, I would say, if you'd asked me this a few years ago, I would have said, don't trust anyone. Just be as, you know, as nasty as somebody who's nasty to you, or, you know, play your cards really close to your chest and all these things that I'm not. But a few years on, where I am now, I stand by who I am. I'm open. I'm trusting. I'm a good person, and I have the right, I have my faults, obviously, but I have the right intentions for my clients and for my staff and for everybody that I know. So I've gone back to being the person that I was. And actually, that's been quite a lesson for me. Don't let a situation like that alter really who you are at your core.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because you go through these experiences and they're often, I mean, even my experience, there's lots of people who I could point the finger at. Well, I could have actually pointed the finger at a number of people in my business when I went through my thing. And you can, it's a real trap of the kind of feeling of, call it, what's it, resentment or bitterness or anger or whatever. And that's a real toxic brew of emotions to live with for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, somebody said to me, very early on, you know, I was clearly struggling with it all, didn't really know what I was going to do with my career. I thought about leaving the law because I thought, well, if people can behave like that, you know, it's not a profession I want to be in. And I was scared. I was scared that I'd never build my reputation again because there were just so many lies being told or assumptions being made. When you're removed from a workplace, people think, you know, that I must have done something dishonest or done something really awful. And I hadn't. It was just bonkers, all of it. So, yeah, I was really scared that I wouldn't pick it all up again.
So this is 2 years in, all this stuff blows up. It's all kind of happening. And then there's two things I'd like to sort of talk about. One is the whole trademarking the name thing, but I'm going to put that to one side for a second. But this moment in time when you're out, you've been sort of popped out like a pea out of the shell and you're sort of out of the gang now, which you're probably on one level happy about because it wasn't mapping with your values and who you wanted to be. But on another flip of it, you're scared. There's this swirling gossip perhaps in the industry. There's allegations or things that like shenanigans and antics going on. How did you go about picking yourself up in that moment?
Well, I don't quite know how I did it now because I set my own firm up. I got a little unit off the parkway that used to be Sheffield Airport. And I sat in this room on my own, cried. You know, I'd been a solicitor for 20 years. And we did everything on paper. You know, I'm of a generation, I'm in my 50s, so my generation. We didn't even have emails when I started practicing. So a lot of what I had, we build precedents. And I had folders and folders of it. I then had loads on electronically. And they took all of that and they wiped it all. And, you know, nobody could do anything about it, the ICO or anything. Because if somebody's going to do something really bad, there's not much that can happen to get that back. So they took so much of my data. And I sat there and I thought, well, what am I going to do? But you know what? Now I look back and I think they did me such a big favour. Because had that not happened in the way it happened, I couldn't have built a firm that is fit for now, you know, fit for when I was building it. I would have used the same precedents, the same forms, I would have created the same systems, and I didn't. I kind of just looked inside my own head and thought, what is it that I want to do? What clients do I want to work with? How do I want to structure this, you know, with every single piece of paper or pro forma or whatever, you know, that we use in the law. And I think, you know, that was good in the end.
Yeah, amazing. You literally got a blank sheet of paper in front of you. It's in some ways freeing because you can start from first principles almost.
Yeah. And I mean, you'll be talking to so many different business people. If you've got a product or you don't have, you know, I always think that in some ways when you're in a profession, the service sector, it doesn't help you sometimes if you're business minded because you're so limited by your profession. And as a lawyer, you know, you're taught many things about how to conduct yourself, including not to market yourself, not to be overtly, you know, selling, not to do lots of things, you have got a solicitor's code of conduct. And actually that really sort of limits you. But I think because I'd got to that point where I was, I didn't see it like creating a law firm. I thought, well, actually, this is very different to when I joined a partnership in my 20s. I can do what I want as long as I abide by the solicitor's code of conduct. And all that really means common sense. I mean, it's a huge, huge, you know, tome, but common sense says you do things right. you look after your money in the right way. You don't take anything from clients. You treat them with respect and, you know, put them first all the time. And you look at outcomes rather than just charging them for advice that, you know, they don't need. You look at what they need, give them the outcome they want, which is what my business is all about. So, it was an interesting exercise. And then as I started taking on staff, you know, there are lots of things I was never good at and I'm not good at and that I'd never done. So I'd never looked after the finances of a firm. I'd never looked after the compliance, which I hate all that, you know. I'm good at the marketing, I'm good at the client relationships and I was good at the law, but I didn't really know anything about IT and everything else. So you found good people to help. And again, that's worked, you know, outsourcing. Like people outsource to me and my firm, their HR and employment law, I found good people to outsource various things to rather than trying to do it all.
Mm. So, you've got this sort of period where you come out, all this negative energy, you sat in this room in Sheffield by Sheffield Airport with a blank sheet of paper and it's all to go for, which is simultaneously scary and freeing. And then you set off on your mission. Can you give me an example of around about that time where you really feel like you started to own that? Like you really became your own person, perhaps, or your own entrepreneur in that through that experience. But when's a good example of when you felt like, now I get it, it's really happening for me in my way?
I think that only really started happening in sort of after the first year, where I felt, because my clients started finding me and realizing I wasn't there, even though my picture was still up on their website and they were still using my name. So, you know, there was two sides to this. So I was operating as Bayani Law. They were operating as Bayani Bracewell, which was the trading name that we operated my team under there. One of my team members was still there, literally pretending I was there. You know, they would not tell people I'd left. So it was such a battle all the time, you know. People would speak to me. I've been around for so many years. People would speak to me and say, oh, I went to your firm the other day. I spoke to so-and-so in your team. And, you know, I was like a mad woman trying to tell people, no, that's not me. That's not my firm. But, yeah, so when the turning point for me was suddenly I got this influx of clients contacting me. And I think that's because somebody had left there. So the last sort of person that, you know, would have been there to pretend that I, because everybody, so many people left at the time or after I left. And then clients started finding me and saying, oh, well, we thought you were there. And that gave me a lot of confidence. And then I got new clients that I wouldn't have expected to work with who said, well, we wouldn't have worked with you because you were working there, but, you know, we want to work with you now. So, yeah. So then I started thinking, oh, this is pretty good. And also I created a low cost base to start with. So as the money's coming in, although what we do isn't huge money, it's not a huge fee generating type of law. We do a lot on fixed fees, very small fixed fees compared to, you know, what I was used to charging. But if you've got lots of those little things coming in and your overheads are low, as a business, I started thinking, well, hang on. It was ingrained in me that you charge. So for my level of qualification, I would charge now £300 an hour when somebody comes to me for advice when things have gone wrong with their employees. And when I sort of sat and looked at it, I thought, well, I need to get rid of that mindset. I don't need to charge by the 6-minute unit at £300 or 280 or whatever it was then per hour. I charge what I think is reasonable, that is going to leave enough for me and my overheads and my staff, be a really good deal for the client. So it's a very, very different sort of business model. So I really got out of that 6-minute unit traditional lawyer thinking, and that liberated me a lot.
That's really interesting. I have a business which sells time. It's a service business. And it's a real trap, that kind of hourly rate thing, both for you and the client, actually, because it focuses on what you should be focused on is value,
yeah,
for the customer, actually. And I think there really was a liberation in thinking through this, where you could actually reimagine the entire thing. Just before we get in, I'd like to get into that, but just this whole trademarking of name thing, because we didn't sort of finish chatting on that. I'm just curious, how does one resolve this issue where your surname is being used in a firm, and you're now got another, your own name in this, in your new firm? How did you resolve that issue?
So, you know, any common sense view, and people were all the time saying to me, I can't believe that they're doing that. You know, surely you can't do that. So from a common sense point of view, it's madness that somebody else is operating in your name when I've got no value for it. It's not like I'm Joe Malone who's then trying to fight for my name when I've actually been paid shed loads of money. Well, I think that's how it happened. You know, shed loads of money for the use of my name. This is theft of my name, because we had an agreement that they would not use my name if I left. And, it, you know, reneged on it, obeyed she. So, you know, I then met a solicitor who knew me and knew them and said, oh, I'm sure it's, you know, let me just speak to them. And he's a good guy. And he said, let me just speak to them, you know, let's sit down and work this out. And a lot of people said that. And that's how I would help somebody. And I said, well, you don't know this person, but please give it a go. And then everybody was shocked at, you know, the fact that she just would not let it go, refused to do it, to revoke the trademark, even after they stopped using it, because they were then forced to stop using it, would not revoke it. So my fear was, well, if I make a success of this business and I've got somebody else who's holding on to my name, which is quite unique, that's not going to help, because one day I didn't trust her not to pop up and say, well, actually, I want loads of money for the use of this name, because there were so many underhand things going on that, you know, I didn't even think were possible, if I'm honest. So I had to fight to revoke the trademark, and then there were cross litigation. So they then fought. So I started this claim for a breach of trademark. They cross-sued me for breach of restrictive covenants on an agreement that I had not agreed to. But, you know, it became, as a lawyer as well, going through that process in a court system that I wasn't familiar with. So this was in the London IPEC, Intellectual Property Enterprise Court, that I'd never heard of as an employment lawyer, using a solicitor who had all the right intentions but was clearly out of his depth because he didn't know anything about that court system. And it was just a nightmare because they would not give in. And then she disappeared and they said she was on a sabbatical, and, you know, delay after delay after delay. So it eventually took 4 years. I lost on a technical sort of ruling. So my solicitor said we should be arguing that I had goodwill in the name, but the court decided you can't generate goodwill in a name where you've not already practiced on your own account. And, you know, technical argument. And I can see that. I can see that now, why that didn't succeed, but it wasn't my specialism. So I, you know, my solicitor didn't foresee that. My barrister didn't foresee that. So, you know, then suddenly I'm in all this legal press, which was also quite worrying for me reputationally. Until I joined the Law Society in London on a board I sat on, Women Lawyers, and this lawyer from London said to me, oh, are you Jay Bayani? Are you the one who's in the, whatever it was, the Law Society Gazette with this goodwill finding? And I was so embarrassed and so scared of what she was going to say, because it said you know, lots of things about the practice. And she said, wow, really impressive. You must be really good if they want your name. And I thought, whoa,
that's amazing.
Maybe I am.
That's amazing. Well, isn't that an incredible little story, that little vignette, like what the story playing in your mind and the story playing in this other woman's mind?
Yeah.
It was the polar opposite. Yeah, what a moment. So can you've gone all these through these experiences, both as an employee, well, a staff member, from the employee point of view, and then you've gone through an experience where as a almost a punter going into the legal system, because like I'm not a lawyer, so if I went into the legal system I'm just out of my depth and I don't know really what's going on. But you found this little niche within the legal system which was not your domain. So what was your emotionals like? I mean, again, I'm sure it was very stressful, but like going through this sort of thicket, I mean, what do you think you've learned from that?
Well, I've learned, and I say this regularly to people who come to me and say that, because it's not unusual to have a battle with your ex-employer or your business partner, as I'm finding now, lots of people go through it. Lots of very successful people go through it. And I suppose what I've learned is don't fight. You know, somebody else said to me right at the beginning, don't do it. Don't get into a fight, because you can't rationalize with crazy, is this person's words. You can't rationalize with someone who's not rational. So he said, why are you spending your money and your energy on fighting a battle that you will inevitably lose because of what it will take away from you for however long it takes? And actually, what you should do is concentrate your energies on, you know, being as successful as you can, because that's the best sort of vengeance and karma. And I did I mean, you know, that's what I sort of stand by now. And I say that to other people. But in my case, I was already embroiled in it by then. I couldn't get out of it because they wouldn't even let me get out of it when I tried to get out of it. You know, because she was absolutely hell-bent on destroying me and, you know, carrying on with this case, knowing that they had in-house lawyers that could deal with it without costing them a penny. And I was incurring everything that came into the firm went out in legal fees. And I had, you know, I had to move house. I had to make a lot of sacrifices. My kids had to make a lot of sacrifices. But then, yeah, by then I was all in it and I had to just go ahead. And then I found this great barrister down in Windsor, especially that deals with law firm disputes. And that was a real game changer. As I sat with him in his little office near Windsor Castle for 8 hours, I think, crying at first, bringing my whole box of papers, saying, I don't know what to do with this. I can't get out of it. I can't progress it. I'm running out of money. And he said, well, I'm going to charge you money. So you have to find the money for that. But I'm going to get you out of it one way or another. And what he started doing, and he said, at first, he probably didn't even believe the story. But then as he got to grips with it, he said, I can see exactly what's happened here. He's a really, really intelligent guy. And he said, I'm going to give them a taste of what you've been going through. So trust me and we'll sort this out. And I did. So for the next 6 months or so, he took it over. He started bombarding them with emails on a Friday evening with requests for papers, which they were doing to me for years. He started challenging them on their the truth-telling that was coming out of some of this stuff. And he just bought my corner. And my strapline at Bayani Law is in your corner. And honestly, it was the first time during this whole thing that I felt somebody professionally was absolutely in my corner. And we got out of it. It did cost me a lot of money, but I got my name. They revoked the trademark.
Wow, what a story. I mean, yeah, so you got to where you wanted to get to, but it came at a price, financially, emotionally, energetically, for your family. And, you know, looking back at all that time, what were the big takeouts from that? What were the things that if you were going to advise someone who's listening, after going through this experience of this sort of traumatic, difficult experience, but ultimately you've got to where you've got to and you're now kind of, you've got your name back, as it were. What's the big insight? What's the lesson for someone else to take from that?
I think maybe choose your battles. So think about whether it is really that important before you enter into something. And you know, think about your own resilience, because the thing is that although I was very, very damaged by it, I've learned that I have a lot of resilience. And anybody that knows me would know that and were shocked at seeing how I'd become through it. You know, fairly short time in your life, but felt like a very long time. Not everybody is up to that, you know, emotional trauma. So you've got to think, well, is this worth it? And think about the gain, you know, what's the point when you can when you should probably concentrate your energies on getting on. And the irony is, you know, those 4 years of that battle, I thought my firm was doing okay, but everything was going out in legal fees. As soon as that battle was over, I got in my car, and I don't think I've ever told anyone this, but I got in my car the evening that we signed this agreement that ended things. And I put the radio on, and I know it just sounds so pathetic, but you know that song, I Can See Clearly Now?
Oh, yeah.
That came on, and I was listening to this, and it was just like that. My clarity came back. I was in this sort of fog for 4 years, and literally within 8 months of that court case finishing, I had remade all the money that I lost in that case. Just by focusing my time back on actually doing, you know, what I should have been doing. And I built the team and, you know, things just started moving at a much faster pace because I wasn't bogged down with that hanging over me.
Yeah, all that negative energy that you can now use creatively and investing into the relationships around you and your team and being able to show leadership in your company. I get that because it's funny, the rough and tumble when you're in the kind of
washing machine of the experience. My mine's very different to yours, but I that kind of, it takes up so much energy just surviving. I think there's something to really take seriously, actually.
Mm.
So now you can see clearly, and now your energy is flowing neatly, and you've got your name back, and it's all rocking and rolling. So you have been, this sort of, which I'm really pretty pleased for you. So well done. And that's really kind of what a story to sort of surface out of. And I think, as you're saying, a kind of great life lesson. And you mentioned earlier about how this has taught you empathy for your clients, for the people working with you. And has it taught you empathy as a boss as well? Do you think that's something you've learned?
Well, very much, yeah. And I would hope that all of my all the people that work with me and people that don't no longer work with me, I would hope would say that I've always had a lot of empathy, but I've always been quite a nurturing person. But I do drive people. You know, I have expectations that not all employee relationships will work out. But I think that, like I was saying earlier, going back, so the firm that I grew up in, and I lost my dad when I was six. So the reason I mention that is that the two partners who ran this very traditional firm called Watson Eason, where I did my newly qualified to senior partner, everybody looked after each other. And there were some real challenges business-wise, but we looked after each other. We didn't shaft anyone. And they taught me that treating people nicely, whether it's the cleaner or it's the, you know, it's a fellow partner, is important. And so I've always, you know, done that, I think, and believed in that. Then I went to that firm where, honestly, it was the polar opposite. So what I've learned is that the right way to do it was the first way, because you still make money. In fact, you make more money if you treat people well, because you get more out of them. So yes, I think I have a lot of empathy for my clients and for my team. And of course, now dynamics are changing. So, you know, as you all know, with kids of a similar age to mine, you know, neurodiversity, something we're working on quite a lot here, ADHD, autism spectrum disorders, mental health issues, particularly for younger people and with COVID, you have to look after them. You have to, if you want your employees to even function, you have to be supportive and nurturing, or at the very least understand what's going on for them and how to get the best out of them.
Yeah, that's a very good shout. And I think that's something we've worked on actively. I mean, I've had mental health issues over the years as a direct result of burnout, stress, what have you. And we've got quite focused on that, because everyone has these, particularly again through pandemic and lockdown and is a whole thing. But then again, around neurodiversity and actually just being accommodating of that. And to your point of getting more out of people by giving them that space to be themselves, 100%. And I think you work in recruitment. It's hard to find good people. So if you find good people, keeping them is a good plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And people fall out as an employment leader. Obviously, I've seen it all over so many years. People fall out over the tiniest things. And I've done that, you know, over my nearly 30-year career. And I look back and I think, well, why was I just so stupid about that? Why did I not just let that go? You know, particularly when I was younger, I was like quite a hard taskmaster. Mm. And I used to think, well, if they don't do things in the way I do things, you know, the way I do things is right, and wanted everybody to be in my mold. And that's the other thing you learn as you get older and you have a few knocks as well in life. And you have kids, that's the game changer, because you realise they're not everybody is a mini me. And actually, I don't want everyone to be a mini me, because it would be a very hard place to work. And so I think I do quite a good job in understanding what motivates people and playing to their strengths and saying, it's okay if you don't want to do this aspect, don't worry about it, as long as you're doing this other aspect. And, you know, if I can, where I can, I'll work it like that.
That's very good. Now, well, we're getting towards the end of our podcast time together. And I think there's so much rich information in there for anyone listening, really, but particularly if someone's leading a business and facing decisions, choices, battles to fight, how to be as a professional, but also as a boss or what have you. So it's been really fascinating story. And so thank you for sharing so openly. What's great about here is so much you can learn, so much good advice. But what I like to ask my guests, is there's lots of advice that we've got here today and lots of advice out there for entrepreneurs. So what advice should someone listening ignore from what's said out there on LinkedIn or on the press about being an entrepreneur? What should we ignore?
I think that you should, it's not necessarily what you should ignore, it's who, I think it's who is giving that advice and whether you should ignore that. And I mean, I had people giving me advice about all sorts of things, but I think, you know, and then you start battling in your mind about, well, is this right or is this right? I would say ignore those people that haven't walked the walk. So those people, you know, you'll come across in life who'll say, oh, this is how you should do it, this is how you should do it. But actually, look at their track record. They actually succeeded in doing what you want to do. Find those people that have. And you know what? People are very happy to help. So I get other lawyers. Throughout my career, I've had other, particularly women, junior women, who'll say, would you mind, you know, speaking to me about how you did what you did or give me some advice? And I'm very happy to share that. You know, but if you listen to people that haven't actually walked in the path that you want to walk in, then how are they going to actually give you any valuable advice?
That's very good shout. Everyone's got an opinion, not always a valid opinion. If someone did want to connect with you, where's the best place to find you online or on social media? Where can we find you?
So, yeah, we're pretty good at being all over social media, but it's our website is a good place to start to understand what we're about. So it's www.byarneylaw.co.uk, and then we've got our sister business, www.byarneyrecruitment.co.uk. And I think even just looking at, you know, they're not expensive websites or anything. I don't spend like loads of money on all that, but it gives you a sense of who me, not just me, but my team, you know, who create a lot of the success. Most of the success that we have nowadays, you know, it tells you what we're about.
Brilliant. Well, I think I would recommend everybody check it out because it's a pretty innovative firm. And again, there's loads of interesting stuff in there about the business model innovation you went through around the hours, how you're approaching things, lots of great information. So check her out online. And thank you again so much for being so open. And I'm really so honored to have you here. So big love from here to everyone listening and to you, Jay, and I'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluupthebusiness.com. And just enter your email address. There's a little box. Just enter it in and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us. Help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company... give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.